It's my pleasure to be here, and I thank the Laura Ingalls Wilder Awards Committee of the Association for Library Service to Children, a division of the ALA, for this medal. That early morning phone call certainly took me by surprise. I stood at a podium similar to this at a Newbery Caldecott occasion in San Francisco, exactly 20 years ago this year. Sometime before the ceremonies, I remember having my 8-year-old son Jamie with me and peeking in at the vast ballroom where I explained I would give my Newbery acceptance. Clutching my hand, Jamie pulled me inside. He stared open-mouthed at the seemingly endless rows of brightly dressed tables as waiters busied themselves placing napkins, forks, and knives. "Wow, Mom," he said, "you never told me this is what you'd been doing." Jamie called me after hearing about this award. He's now 28 and living in New York. He said, "Congratulations, Mom. I see you're still doing it." "Well, yes, I am. I don't know how else to do. I simply write. It's my pleasure and my reward to be able to write novels and biographies and the art form of collections of stories, both fiction and nonfiction, books such as The People Could Fly, and the new one coming out in the fall with Scholastic, Her Stories, African-American Folk Tales, Fairy Tales, and True Tales. I find that I get tremendous satisfaction from connecting my own sensibilities to storytellers long since gone. I definitely feel that I am in contact with those tellers through their spiritual selves, that they've passed to me their personal expressions in the tales they've told. My call is to bring to light again what it was inside those individuals that made them want to inform us of their lives and to confess to us their hopes and dreams. Perhaps my hardest work is novel writing. Through such fictions, I attempt to capture the perfect pictures and perfect scenes and ideas on my mind. I never do. But my challenge is to come as close as possible through words to what I see. It is the heart of the child, the young person, that I am in search of in these books, and it is the goal of my imagination to make the perfect book. But of course, I never have, never can. And yet the wish, the dream stays with me and sees me through difficult books such as Plain City or M.C. Higgins the Great. My Plain City is a fictional town, but the real Plain City, Ohio, which I've never seen, is not far up northeast on the interstate. Recently, I received a letter from a fourth grade class and their teacher from a Plain City elementary school. Every student had signed the letter. The letter writer wrote that they wanted me to come visit the real Plain City. "Oh, it's not like your wonderful book," said the writer. "We just have this super-duper supermarket on our main street, and we have this humongous restaurant that seats 300 people all at once." I had a vision of that many people rushing in and simultaneously grabbing seats. "Oh, won't you come," the child wrote. "We'll show you all around. Everybody wants you to come to our school and to see the real Plain City. It's not grand, but we like it a lot." So I wrote back and told them that one day, when it was warm and the sun was full over the real Plain City, I was going to try to walk in and have lunch with them. It would be a surprise. After all, I did borrow the name of their town and make up my own Plain City. And I'm telling all of you as a kind of pledge or warranty to make sure that I do go visit. You know, I don't mind saying it. I do like the books I write. They come out of the real in my life, I believe. I love the book Anthony Burns, The Defeat and Triumph of a Fugitive Slave. It's not quite a novel and not a biography. It's best described as an historical reconstruction. And I found that through the life of this unfortunate black man, there was a true spirit, a gentle human being whose bravery and persistence to be free gave courage and impetus to others of his time. I come from a different time than Anthony Burns, but I am of the same African-American parallel culture as he. The same urge and need for freedom and equality is where I stand by him. I call works such as the Burns book and the Her Stories work liberation literature because the writer as well as reader bears witness to and experiences vicariously the tribulations of others who triumph finally over hostile forces. Their triumph is ours. We live through their experience, through our understanding of and empathy with the words, the very language which recreates their all-too-human condition. Most of the time I write close to my own original source, hometown, my Perry Hamilton family and ancestry. I draw as near as I can to that deep well of fact and memory. One finds my autobiographical signature in books such as Cousins and, of course, Plain City. Some of the cleanest scenes in those books actually took place, with new settings and a new cast of people, mainly children. Those scenes often grow from hearsay as well. They may not come out of my own life, but from incidents in the lives of people close to me, from my sisters and brothers, friends, and elder relatives. I pull out the incidents, true or good tall tale, from the lives of family generations and the ghosty memories of times gone by. One finds such essence as well in the myth-making of a book like The Magical Adventures of Pretty Pearl, which is the longest book I've ever written. And with the new Her Stories work, I go farther back than my own family generations to bring into the light long past times and the collective imagination of African-American women. So many different kinds of Her Stories in one gathering reveal who we women were and are in all our shades of difference, our separate passions, and what we hold in common, and in our most secret imaginings. In these 28 years from where I began as a professional writer with Zeeley in 1967, there's no way that I've reached this point in time and place without the help of many friends and sister and fellow librarians and other professionals. This award is for the body of my work, and I need to acknowledge my debt to editors as well, who over the years taught me, always encouraged me, fought with me over syntax, sentences, and ideas, and gave me the last word to a woman or man. The final words were always, "It's your book, Virginia." They remain my friends, and I'm fond of all of them. Editors make writers feel that each one of us is the only one, and writers are so insecure they believe for a time in the presence of their editor that they are the only importance, the only significance. It's a marvelous subterfuge, very necessary for the ego. I admire the editors for that, and over the years for that great association, for you who cared so deeply about my words. I believe the past prophesies the future, and I'd like to thank Richard Jackson, now of Orchard Books, who was my first editor when I started out, who said, and I've never forgotten, "Virginia, there is only one way to write a book." I've pondered that for years. What did he mean by that? Susan Hirschman, head of Green Willow, who taught me how to think about my writing. She certainly taught me how to think about M.C. Higgins. Anne Benedeuse, Patricia Gouch of Philomel, Stephanie Spinner, Frances Foster, then of Random House and Knopf, all are splendid appraisers of the written word. Janet Schulman of Knopf Random, my college chum and oldest friend, guided my books over the years through Macmillan, Green Willow, and Knopf. She was unable to attend on the occasion of my Newbery Award, but is here tonight. And Robert Warren, who didn't mind at all that The Magical Adventures ran to more than 300 pages, he just let it fly. And to my present editor, the editorial director of Scholastic Hardcover, and editor-in-chief of Blue Sky Press, Bonnie Verberg, I give thanks for her always wanting to do things right. We've been in association for about 10 years now. It seems like only yesterday we started on In the Beginning. I remember her with me in Ohio. It was 4 a.m, and we were, to say it politely, discussing a somewhat obscure philosophical point in an ancient story. What we were doing actually was taking one another's measure. And since, we've had some pretty good, long, hard battles over words. There's nothing like a great editor and the first streaks of dawn to make an author see the light. We both learned how to be winners by making a book the best book that we know how. Bonnie Verberg takes the kind of care that is needed on a book. She will go that extra 100 miles for a project, and she will see it through. She will enter deeply into the racial and cultural milieu of my literary vision, and not only into the literary style of my writing. Bonnie Verberg and the other editors I've known all have had a commitment to a true American literature for the young that is inclusive. Which brings me to my present publisher, to Scholastic's Richard Robinson, Barbara Marcus, Jean Fywell, Julie Newman, John Mason, and so many others at the company. I salute all of you for finding the many wonderful ways you have for presenting all kinds of books to all kinds of kids, not just my books. You found a method to include practically every wish and dream of children. Whether it is guidance through for the millions of readers of certain titles or the thousands of readers of other titles, you do wonderful work with regard to all readers, and I am proud to be associated with you. I thank all my friends in the American Library Association. 28 years ago, if I may wax nostalgic for a moment, some of us were pretty young together. Ethel Ambrose, Betty Peltola, who was on my awards committee 20 years ago, Amy Kelman, also on that committee, Augusta Baker. Oh, so many of you, I can't name you all. I am terrible with names, but bear with me while I name some of you. And all the new ones I keep adding to the list of my friends who have me to your area for a lecture in the library or to meet students in a local bookstore or school, and who simply love a Hamilton book. I thank you. You have never failed to be interested in my work and to take it seriously. Sometimes you take it too seriously. But gamely, you fondle the books as far out as they might go, always looking, trying to understand, what is she up to now, I wonder? A trilogy? A book about planets? What is this animal, Jaggerundi? You come along. You have presented my material many times to students who might otherwise have been too cautious to enter into a Virginia Hamilton book. Binnie Tate, Betsy Hearn, Ginny Cruz, Mary Lou White, Gertrude Herman, Effie Lee Morris, Henrietta Smith, Carolyn Field, K.T. Horning, Anne Izzard, Jane Botham, Mary Liz Ledley, Connie Harris, Mary Somerville, G.T. Johnson, Maggie Kimmel, Helen Mullen, Peggy Coughlin, Floyd Dickman, Kathy East, Marilyn E. Russo, Carolyn Brody, Zena Sutherland. I could go on over practically the whole room, so please, everybody else, wave. It follows that storytelling is my way of sharing in community. When I was a child, the story lady at the library read stories to us children as we sat around her on what came to mean to me a magic carpet. I have ridden that carpet all this way, and I have been making multicultural literature for everyone for over a quarter century. I see my books and the language I use in them as empowering me to give utterance to my dreams and wishes, and those of other African Americans like myself. I see the imaginative use of language and ideas as a way to illuminate a human condition, lest we forget where we came from. All of us came from somewhere else. My work as a novelist, biographer, and creator and compiler of stories has been to portray the essence of a people who are a parallel culture community in America. Through my writing, I have meant to portray the traditions, the history of African Americans, a parallel culture people, as I see them, while attempting to give readers strong stories and memorable characters. Young readers have the right not only to read, but to read about themselves, about who they are and what they want. My books entertain, and they also express my feelings about the equal worth of us all. My assumption is that all parallel cultures are equal, that there really is no minority or majority people. The experiences of us all are vital to the American fabric, and through writing I attempt to recognize the unquenchable spirit of us all. I need to thank my husband, Arnold Adolph. We celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary this year. My goodness gracious. In all those years, he has been my most faithful friend and stalwart supporter. He is wise, and he is insane, and never ever boring. Thank you for everything, my dear heart. Thank you, my children, Lee and Jamie Adolph, for being yourselves, such an inspiration. Finally, I would like to say I will cherish this medal and what it stands for. I will keep it safe in my little house, which is almost on the prairie. Thank you.